Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Darren Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. Whether you're a seasoned operator or simply curious about the world of fintech, Talking Success is the perfect place to stay up to date on the latest developments in the industry. So sit back, grab a coffee, and let's start talking success. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of Talking Success. I am thrilled to have a very good friend of mine, actually, on today, Brendan Williamson, who is the MD of Payfast here in South Africa. Relatively newly appointed Payfast MD, so I'm sure he's spinning many plates and he's got a lot on his to-do list, but he's graciously given us some of his time today, and we're going to talk about a subject that actually we discussed over dinner a few weeks ago, which was this thing called omni-channel payments, and specifically what it is here in sort of South African context. But perhaps we'll delve a little bit deeper to see what it means for the rest of the continent as well, if we get some time. So, Brendan, over to you. Do you want to do a quick intro? Although I've kind of introed you, but do you want to do a quick intro about yourself? Because you don't look old enough to have been in payments as long as you've been in payments. So maybe you can just sort of shed a bit of light on your background.
That really gets you everywhere, Don. Thanks for the opportunity. I feel like we have these conversations regularly. So it's quite interesting to have a recorded one. I have a background about me. I mean, I've been in the e-commerce space for good on 20 years plus. And I keep often say that when online payments wasn't online payments yet. So really, I've been part of the whole boom of e-commerce, to say. My expertise really lay in the fraud management side of online payments. As with anything, if something new comes out, someone will try and disrupt it and break it and benefit from it, not necessarily always in a good way. So I spent most of my career traveling the globe, consulting for multinationals and larger firms in terms of their fraud management practices around e-commerce and setting up their fraud units. And then naturally, payments is a big part of that. So evolving and taking a keen interest in the world of payments and how it makes our life a bit better in terms of removing a lot of friction in terms of what we do on a daily basis. So, that's in a nutshell. That's just a brief background.
Well, it's a good segue onto kind of, I suppose, the first point, which is, you know, omni-channel payments really is designed with sort of the consumer in mind, but as well as the merchant as well, right? So to give a multitude of different payment options to a merchant in terms of acceptance, but also a consumer in terms of availability to pay using various different methods. As it stands here in South Africa, what are the primary channels for payments? Are you able to give any data in terms of what percentages are online versus offline versus card present, etc.? Or is that a bit too much of an ask for a Tuesday afternoon?
I mean, there is data out there. As a payments company, it's something that we've been shown are quite interested in terms of just what the space really looks like. The difficulty is actually getting access to that level of data in South Africa. It's not readily available. And we've worked with multiple organizations to be able to access some form of data that would depict how true the space is, the e-commerce card not present. I mean, you've got Bankserv that posts data or posts insights around the Black Friday period, which gives us some form of indication. It's still very difficult to say. There's no real governing body that distributes some form of data. What you do find and you do get access to is normally 18 to 24 months late as well. So there's nothing really true. But I mean, if we talk to just about the fact, I mean, you touched on the base that it's really not only about the consumer, but it's about the merchant and what is this omni-channel space and why. Mm. I mean, the rise of technology definitely is the driver behind all this. I spoke to briefly about it earlier, which I alluded briefly to. It's all about removing friction. And that's really what you want as a consumer. Our lives have become so busy. It's all about ease. It's all about access. It's all about everything we touch, the apps that we use on our mobile phone. So even in our day-to-day, you want to be able to get in, get out. And that's really why online shopping has taken off. It's the It's the ease of online shopping. The fact that I don't have to leave my home. I get the parcel delivered to my door. So it takes a lot of friction that I would have had in a face-to-face environment. So you've talked omni-channel. It's, well, how do we take that and how do we put it in a face-to-face environment and almost give that shopper the same experience when he walks into a store in terms of usability, ease of shopping, etc. And also be able to get the same level of attention that you would get in an e-commerce environment. I mean, you like me, you're an avid online shopper, and you also like to research things before you buy it. So, you know, the consumer that's walking into your store nowadays is a very educated consumer. He's already researched the product that he's looking for. He knows what color he wants. He knows the size. He knows everything about that product, even more so than the salesperson standing on the floor, due to the fact that he can do this online now. So your consumer walking in is a very educated consumer. He doesn't want a half an hour's speech or sales presentation in terms of what this does for him. He knows what it does for him. He just wants to get in, get out. And so how do you make that possible for him? And that's really where omnichannel comes in, giving that fluid experience, no matter whether it's face-to-face or whether it's online.
So I had an experience, I think we've discussed this over a glass of wine or two, but I was in the Apple shop in the UK and I wanted to buy a new laptop. And I knew exactly, like you said, I knew exactly what model I wanted. I knew what color I wanted. I knew the spec. I walked into the shop. I spoke to someone, a shop assistant, a sales assistant. I said, I'm looking for MacBook Pro with da-da-da-da-da. He picked it up. He gave it to me. He then had a handheld sort of POS, although it was an iPhone. I did the transaction with him standing there, and I walked out the shop less than 3 or 4 minutes later, having spent, you know, considerably a lot of money on a Mac, right? But that experience of not having to have someone, A, sell to me, because, as you said, I knew what I wanted. Secondly, having to queue, right? So why would I need to queue if I've got the item here? There's someone standing in front of me who can accept payments. It was just absolutely seamless. And then I suppose you take it the next step, right? Which is, I don't know what your view is on whether this would happen or whether this is sort of viable in South Africa or other emerging markets, but you've got like this Amazon Go where you walk into the shop, you pick up your stuff and you walk straight out. You think that would take off here? Or do you think there's some limitations? Is it being trialed? I mean, I know that the retailers are pretty innovative here in South Africa, but do you know of anything like that that's being trialed?
So let's just go back to your first thing in terms of the Apple experience walking into that store. I mean, yeah. for that to take place, there's a few elements that have all come together there. One of the biggest ones is trust. So for you to be able to have initiated that and to walk out with your MacBook, there has to be an element of trust. So you've walked into a store like Apple, which has already got an associated trust to the brand. You were quite happy to do that engagement and to facilitate that transaction on the floor with that salesperson. So if you're talking omni-channel, you know, and I'll come back to your point now in terms of, you know, like Amazon Go, etc., there has to be a level of trust with the consumer and the store. So you wouldn't necessarily just pull out your credit card to anybody pulling out a point of sale device on a shop floor. You know, that you, mm-hmm. I mean, in South Africa and the rest of the world, in many places, you would be skeptical. Oh, do I trust this device? Do I trust the person, etc.? There's the trust element. So let's go back to Amazon Go. So do I think it's viable in South Africa? There have been retailers that have trialed it. And are trialing the service. Once again, I think it comes down to a trusted space, a trusted environment where you place that store. Do I think it has a place? Yes, I do. It will be in a trusted environment where there's already a relationship with the consumer and store. You wouldn't necessarily put it, I don't know, not to stereotype, but it comes down to that element of trust and where. Will it be on a mass rollout that you potentially see in other geographical? Doubt it, but I do believe it will have a place. I'll give you an example. I mean, if you just look at our building, we've got a bit of a cafeteria downstairs, a restaurant, and sells goods. I mean, easily in that environment, this is a trusted space. You know, so X amount of thousand people working in an office building going down to an Amazon Go type approach would really work, the trusted space. So I do think it has a place. I don't think we're there just yet. as a consumer. I mean, we're still trying to get the unbanked bank, and we're still trying to disrupt cash in our world. So I think there's a few other tasks that need to be ticked off first before we get to that point.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
So we've spoken about sort of in a retail, so sort of offline, as it were. When we're talking about online payments, an omni-channel using online, are there a variety of different channels to be used in online payments, for the consumer and for the merchant? What are the sort of pros and cons?
So what you do find is you're finding the marriage between, you know, the offline online space from an omni-channel perspective. And I speak to that whole convenience of having the same experience in the online channel versus offline channel. There is a retailer in South Africa that actually does this quite well. So I can walk into their physical store, and if I select or I purposely go looking for an item that I might have seen on their online channel, and they don't have it within the physical store, the sales staff are pretty readily able to pull a device out, say to me, listen, we don't have it in store. Let's do the transaction. Let's facilitate it. Let's fulfill it, and we'll have the item delivered to you tomorrow morning. You know, so you've seen that crossover. You've seen that marriage come from an online offline perspective. I've used it, so I've trialed it. It works. And what you've gained there is instead of me having walked out of the store because the salesperson would generally have just said, "Oh, sorry, we don't have this. You can find it on our online store." I most likely would have left that store and gone into a competitor two stores down and looked to see whether I can get it, even if I paid a little bit more because I wanted the item. The fact that I could do that transaction in store and the salesperson really didn't give me much time to think about it and said to me, but don't worry, you don't have to take this home with you now. We'll actually have it delivered to you tomorrow at no additional cost. That's when you get it right. And there are, I mean, they're very far and few between, but there are some retailers in South Africa that are using a very, very similar omni-channel approach. We've actually built a little bit of an offline online system for a big retailer in South Africa where the sales staff walk around with their mobile devices. And they've got their own mobile app on that device, and similar to your experience in the Apple store, where you could literally go in, choose your item, a microwave off the shelf, et cetera, and say, well, I'd like to purchase this microwave. You can do the transaction there. And then you can just drive around and collect it at the warehouse. So you don't have to go stand in those queues to do that. So slowly but surely, we're bringing that closer. Are we there yet? No, I don't think we're there yet. There's multiple facets of omni-channel that can come into play. I mean, you know, as founder of the FinTech Association, one of the founders of FinTech Associations, what a big role fintechs play in this space. And that's where you've seen it all come together, right? I mean, you've got this, when we talk omni-channel, yes, omni-channel does speak about payments because we're specifically talking payments now, but omni-channel encompasses a whole array of things depending on who you are. If you look at retailers, you look at them embracing things like insurance, that they wouldn't have done that in the past. So now that I've bought my item in store, like you bought your MacBook, is the ability to make that transaction in store, but also then if you wanted to take an extended warranty out at the same time, pay for it. And so that's embracing a different value of omni-channel. So it's quite expansive, but in terms of this discussion, yes, it's more focused around payments. But you know, if we talk about omni-channel and why the existence of omni-channel, I mean, we speak about this often, really. So go back 10 years ago, you would, specifically in South Africa, there weren't many places you could go and buy a specific item. If you were looking for a branded pair of shoes, for instance, you knew you could go to one or two places, and that's where you went. Nowadays, with online and your sport for choice, really, in terms of where you can go, and you look for efficiencies. Well, now it's not so much about cheaper; it's potentially who's going to get it delivered to me sooner, right? So, so if we look at the choice, so as a merchant now, it comes down to, well, I know Darren's walked into my store. I want him to purchase it. How do I get as much information from Darren so that I know what he likes other than just a pair of shoes? I want him to come back and buy another pair of shoes or buy a pair of socks or whatever it might be else that I have in my store. So how do I get as much information from Darren in a very minimal period of time that allows me to utilize that for future transacting? And that's what Omnichannel also really does encompass or embraces that. It's what data elements can I get from Darren at that point of time that I can make his next call in my store or my online shop a better experience for Darren. So what can I do? What can I present differently? What can I display? How can I take away the friction? So yeah, it's a very, I mean, you know, you and I can talk about this stuff for hours. It's a lot more than just when we talk omnichannel. It's not literally just a payment. It can include a whole variety of different aspects.
And things like lay-by or BNPL, does that form part of the omnichannel kind of ecosystem, or is that separate? That's not really a payment method. It's more of a sort of finance facility.
Yeah, it depends, right? I mean, if you talk about like the BNPL and it's all facility. It is really a payment type or a type of payment that can be done. It would form part of the omnichannel experience or the omnichannel approach. So you would be presented at your point of transacting whether you want to make use of one of those services during the phase. But it wouldn't necessarily be classified as omnichannel itself, but it would be part of the omnichannel experience. Very much like if you have the choice of putting out a card out of your wallet, you have the choice of taking a tap and pay off your phone, using things like a Samsung Pay or an Apple Pay. That's part of the omnichannel experience. And that's one thing that's the if you want to say why, what is the adoption of the omnichannel, or why do I believe it's got a place. I mean, you can just speak about the fact that we all walk around with mobile phones in our hands. You know, that's really what's changing the space. You know, that mobile phone has got more data on it or more insight about me than a card. So it's, you know, if I'm utilizing my mobile phone during that process, is what information is coming through? You know, what is coming off that device that I can utilize as the merchant? You know, and what can I do to, what information that I can extract from that to make this process a lot more seamless?
So that was a nice segue to my next bit. So I was going to talk about wearables and kind of the future of omnichannel payments. Obviously, I did some research and I'm a bit of a geek. And I came across a really interesting one for the future. And actually, it might not be in the too distant future, if you look at some of the vehicles that are being manufactured nowadays, but, you know, connected car payments, you know, being able to drive into a garage, you know, filling up your fuel and driving off because, you know, you've effectively, I suppose, got some sort of NFC chip, you know, within your car. I mean, that makes sense to me, rather than having to stand there and give a card or tap your phone or, you know, it's just the next layer of convenience. Do you see that being just a bit of a gimmick? Do you see that actually being something that's going to be utilized? I mean, I just imagine driving through a drive-through McDonald's and, you know, ordering my Big Mac and just driving straight off because, you know, it's taken it from the chip in my car. Sounds cool. Do you think a bit gimmicky, or is there a real sort of proposition behind that?
It will make you think twice about who you're lending your car to. Does it have a place? I'm sure it will have a place. I mean, you and I both know, we're both Mercedes drivers, so you know the technology that sits in that Mercedes, you know, in terms of connected activity. Yeah. I mean, the fact that we can drive up to our houses, and if we've connected to a digital world, you know, your garage door can open automatically, the kettle can go on, music can play, and that's all driven from the car. So yes, it will definitely have a place. Of course, there's going to be rules around that in terms of how that works. And that's, suppose that's the stuff they're playing with. I mean, one of the things article I read a while back, you know, if you just talk about, you know, in-car payments and how this works, I mean, a Tesla, they were trialing. So basically the Tesla brain or the motor vehicle brain has the ability to connect to other Teslas. So creating this web of Tesla communication that's happening. So you would be able to call your self-drive of Tesla to come collect you and take you to the airport. And while you're driving, well, you'll make your payments. It'll, as you get in the car, it'll say to you, Mr. Franks, it's going to cost you $35 for this journey. Would you like to proceed? And you accept yes, and off you go. It will then have the ability to say to you, I can get you to the airport 5 minutes faster. In order for me to get you there 5 minutes faster, it's going to cost you another $10. Would you like to accept? And you would go, yes, I'd like to. Definitely, when I'm late for my flight, I want to do it. And what that Tesla then does, it communicates to every other Tesla that's on the same road as you going towards the airport, and it then funds each Tesla to move out of the way. So it would take that $10 and fund each Tesla ahead to move out of the way so that it gives you a free drive, free road all the way through to the airport. So, I mean, these things are being tested as we speak, right? So, you know, and talking to your point in terms of, you know, driving through the McDonald's, and it's going to get to the point where you'll drive through the McDonald's and your order will already be ready before you get there because they know that you like a Big Mac. They know that you like quarter pound of the lax. And that's where artificial intelligence, all the rest comes in, where it takes away the ability to think. And that's where the world will get to at some point. Whether we, you and I are still here, you know, if you look at technology and what's happened to it in the last 10 years, I think it's actually very likely.
Because we look in China, and I know China are big on sort of, facial activation for payments, right? So biometric payments. Now, clearly, we've got an element of that here because you need to authenticate your device before you make that payment. But do you see a point, again, here in South Africa or on the continent where you can walk up to a till point and you just look at the screen and it authenticates you as an individual and your payment's done and you walk straight off? Do you see that happening?
You blink twice for a yes and blink once for a no and... Blink three times for credit. And definitely. I mean, retina detection, all that stuff's already been tested and played with. It's all that stuff has a place. And it's all about when it'll come into play. Yeah. We as the consumer, ironically, are going to be driving that innovation. Because as our worlds get busier, we're looking for more efficiency. I mean, you know, you think of how patient we used to be when you used to wait for your Windows PC to start up. Never mind the dial-up modem. You know, you knew it took X amount of time and you would just patiently would do it. Now, if you switch your Mac on and it doesn't come on instantaneously, you get annoyed. You know, it's the same with your mobile phone. You know, you open an app and if you go onto a site and if you don't get a responsive site and it doesn't one click and it's there, you get annoyed. You know, so we as consumers are very much the reason why this innovation will take place. We're forcing it. We're driving it. So, yes, facial recognition, blink twice for a payment, it's going to come.
Well, there's one other area before we wrap up, which I know you're going to be a fan of and me not so much, and that's voice-activated payments. Because I know how much you love your Siri and your Mercedes Me and your Amazon Home Echo thingy-jig. I don't know. For me as a consumer, I can't imagine walking into a shop and saying, you know, 50 Rand, please. Partially because of my accent and people don't understand it when I say 50 Rand. And secondly, I don't know, I just... There's some things not necessarily I'd want to broadcast. I mean, maybe if you're using your Siri or you're in your Mercedes and you're saying, "Hey Mercedes, buy me a Big Mac for 30 Rand," possibly, right? But that's kind of I see that as a Brendan innovation rather than something that's for the wider population. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the anomaly. What do you think? Voice activated payment sounds a bit. I don't know.
I think there's a time and a place for everything, really. And I think, you know, that's the beauty of what we do is we provide various vehicles for payment to take place. So we know that not everybody uses a card. We know that some people like QR code methods. You know, some people would like different. So, but once again, it's great finding a solution that's suitable to the person that's standing in front of the, you know, making that payment, where the voice activation works for you. It might not work, but it might work for me or work for someone else. But, you know, if you think back 5 years ago, do you think you would be tapping your phone or tapping your card or tapping your phone? You know, you go, there's no ways I'm going to tap my phone. There's no ways I'm going to tap my card. And now it's become the norm, right? If you can't tap your phone, you go, geez, there's something wrong with this retailer or you need to upgrade your devices, whatever it might be. So, you know, we say that now, but it may just become the norm. I mean, it does sound a little bit, I don't know if I'd like to stand in a store and go, yeah, make payment, please, or use card one or whatever it might be. But yeah,
you're in a restaurant and you're going to leave a tip, and everyone turns around and goes,
exactly. You're talking about restaurants. I don't know if you've seen that short clip of the two guys stuck in a lift. I think they got Scottish accents, and they're trying to, and it's a voice activated lift, and they're trying to get to the various floors, and then they're going to get so frustrated. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of nuances that will come into play, but talking about restaurants, I remember an experience of mine when I spent some time in London. There was a restaurant close to Piccadilly Circus, and, it was so you walked into this restaurant and it's very dark, but the tables were lit up, and there was no waiter. So you sat at this table, and the menu, everything was projected on the table. So you literally ordered off the table. So you could flip through the menu, order off the table, and you order it. And then all of a sudden, the waiter would appear with your plate of food and put it down. You had the ability also to change the table color, so you could change the tablecloth. So all these tables are changing color all over the place, etc. But when you were ready to pay as well, you paid from the table. You would just go, I'm ready to pay, and called up the bill. You showed the bill, you introduced your tip, and you made payment, and you left the restaurant. The only time you interacted with anybody was the waiter physically putting the food down on your table. But that was the experience. And that was at least 8 years ago. So, I mean, the technology from then has still been around. We just haven't embraced it really. And that's, once again, it's us who drive that, you know. We still like human interaction to some point. I mean, the Bank of America, I think it's Bank of America, they introduced the whole level of AR. I think they took away about 50% of their branches, where you literally just walked in now and you spoke to a virtual person. And you know, what you want to order a new card. So they went through everything in terms of what are the standard things that someone would ask for if you walked into a bank branch, bank balance, like to order a new card, open a new account, etc. And they had huge success with that. Huge success. Obviously, it speaks to a different category of person that would like to experience that. But you still have the one person sitting there to be able to facilitate a face-to-face. But I think this world's going to change and create and develop faster than you and I can imagine, to be honest with you. I mean,
I mean, there's some things that I can't believe haven't caught on. You talk about the restaurant. I remember being in a bar in Dubai, and rather than ordering drinks at the bar, you'd order a keg, right, and they come and put it into the bar, and you just swipe your card at the table, and that was it. You didn't see a waiter or waitress, and you just kept ordering cakes just by pressing a button. Yeah. But that didn't seem to catch on. I haven't seen it yet, but anyway. So the future's bright. You guys at PayFast are doing some pretty cool stuff as well. I'm not sure whether you're privy to announce anything that you're doing, or is that sort of watch this space, and we'll let you know in a couple of months' time. Is there anything you can share?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the stack in terms of development, in terms of product and solution. Definitely a play in this omni-channel space. I mean, we really do play there to some extent, but we will definitely be embracing the face-to-face environment a lot closer. Not necessarily in the traditional style, as you know, we've just created a new brand, or we've reimagined the PayFast brand. So we want to be seen as the innovators within this payment space, the disruptors of sort. But very much keeping in mind the consumer and the merchant, and the growth of our merchants. You know, it's no use developing something that you put out there. It might be the most innovative, but doesn't have traction or doesn't have relevance. So it's still providing solutions and products that hold relevance to our consumers, or to the consumer and the merchant. But yeah, exciting times ahead for us as a business. And what I can say is just watch the space.
Amazing. Brendan, thanks so much.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and have gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.